Joe. I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John. Don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Dunn with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do. Every tray, silver carafe of mash upon a tray of Ray. I'll lick a spoon of Sean. Do I need to go on? I want a cap of Joe.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack tonight at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. As of today, at least 2,501 U.S. troops have been killed in combat since the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003. A poll released Friday by CNN says a narrow majority of the country wants a timetable for troops to come home from Iraq. 47% of those polled say the troop withdrawal should begin within a year or less. However, the U.S. House today rejected a timetable to withdraw troops. The vote on the non-binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released by the Pentagon this afternoon says U.S. Special Forces gave Iraqi prisoners only bread and water for more than 2 weeks and used harsh, unauthorized interrogation practices against others. The federal report calls such incidents wrong but not illegal. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There's also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. Homeland Security warns most U.S. cities and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. Maine announced today it was beginning to test migratory birds for the avian flu. Maine's plan is modeled on the one in Alaska, where it's believed the first U.S. case will be found. Wildfires are burning in Colorado, Texas, Arizona, and Alaska. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a fire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, more than 7,000 acres have been scorched. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children. family and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Ford says it will funnel millions of dollars into three factories in Mexico, the additional investment south of the border, as well as construction of a new plant in an undisclosed location, is billed as part of the automaker's economic turnaround effort. Japan today unexpectedly lost two key votes before the International Whaling Commission. Japan says it will consider quitting the international regulatory group if commercial whaling in the Pacific is not resumed. Apple Computer is investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. A subsidiary of Schlumberger announced it has been fined nearly $20 million. The subsidiary of the world's largest oil field services company was charged with making out fake visa applications for foreign workers on U.S. ships in the Gulf of Mexico. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 was down 5 at 1252. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
The following is a Fourth Estate Radio special announcement.
The following standing ovation is for the International Whaling Commission for telling the Japanese and other pro-whaling nations like them where they can take their bogus research whaling programs and stick it.
From every angle, even from down under. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. Fourth Estate Radio is brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Get in on the conversation by calling 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. And now, your trans-global hosts, John Fox and Bruce Birch.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard to another edition of Fourth Estate Radio. I am John Fox, one of your hosts in Sydney, Australia. And Bruce Birch, yep, there in North Carolina, buddy, are you?
I certainly am. And how are you today, John?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. I'm doing very, very good. I don't know quite that what that means for Micah, but I'll ask for a translation later.
Let me just tell you, I'll translate real quick. I actually have a webcam up that is taking pictures of me as we're doing the show, and it's uploading it to a web page. So if you want to check out Bruce doing the show, go to mwbr.net/fer. Very easy to remember. mwbr.net/fer, and you'll get me in a hat sitting in a chair.
I hope there's more than just a hat, Bruce, please.
There's a shirt too, and some
either
other
that
stuff.
Or a real tight camera angle. But anyway, as usual, we're chatting at headonradionetwork.com, streaming on the White Rose Society. Geez, Bruce, got a full boat tonight. You've got a whole bunch of kind of interview stuff happening. And we have a special guest interview happening, and I think you should take it from there.
We do have a couple of interesting things tonight. First thing is we have this weekend in Durham, North Carolina, was the Southeastern Social Forum meeting, which is basically an organizers of social justice and community grassroots initiatives conference, and they're actually going to be meeting again tomorrow in Durham from 9 until 4. But we got a really interesting interview. We have a special correspondent who is going to be joining us a little bit later to talk about this particular interview. It's with a gentleman who is the executive director of the Southwest Union, which is a community organizing and immigrants labor organizing organization out of, out of San Antonio, Texas. So... very interesting interview with him. And then later on in the show, we will have a guy on who is from Florida who will be talking with him about he's a journalist at InsiderMagazine.com, and he'll be talking about an experience wherein he was jailed and beaten and tortured by Florida police for doing investigative reporting. And actually, I think he was doing reporting, investigating the prisoner abuse that is going on in Florida's jails and prisons when he himself became a victim of it.
That's just incredible, man. You sent me the links to some of the stuff on this gentleman and that first image you see, and I'm just like, whoa! I can't wait to hear this guy's story because It sounds like, you know, proof of some of our worst fears when things just, I don't know, have no checks or something. I can't wait for that. Sorry, man. My brain got lost just looking at the image on that website again. But we got a bunch of stuff otherwise to talk about. I really want to talk about what makes a real Democrat sometime later tonight. And if you go to 12th Harmonic blog at 12thharmonic.net, there's a story there, corporate shills posing as Democrats. And if you go to this Real News Project site and start reading, it's a lengthy piece. Your head's going to hurt. That's all I'm going to tell you. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But first we're going to have our special correspondent on at the bottom of this hour, and then we're going to have this other gentleman on the bottom of the second hour, if I'm not mistaken, Bruce.
That is correct, yes. It'll be a free-for-all after midnight, right? We're gonna let our hair down. And
yeah, that's what I reckon. That's what I reckon, man. You know, it's kind of like all of a sudden, like, ooh, we have all this structure. We have to be good boys. We have guests. We have to do the other thing. And then, you know, all bets are off come midnight. But remember, you can get in on the program by ringing into 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, if I'm remembering that right. And, yeah, come into the chat room, dive in. What else you got burning your behind this week, Bruce?
That's not a good analogy. But, oh, analogy. Anyway, my goodness. Well, you know, this all kinds of stuff's been happening this week. You know, my first week of doing a daily show was this past week, John, and I got to tell you, I had a fan. Yeah, thank you. I had a great time, and it was had some wonderful guests on. Looks like we may have Wayne Madsen of WayneMadsenReport.com every Friday to talk about the juicy stuff that's happening in D.C. every week. We're trying to build a new radio program to fill some time, not only fill some time, but to create some positive, fantastic, programming here on the Head On Radio Network, and you know we're steadily growing. Every week, something new gets added to the list, and I think it's really neat to see us taking off like we're taking off. So.
Yeah, and kind of on a side thing to that, I guess we can let some of the regular family know that kind of soon you're going to hear coming into the program as another way to help build this, you know, which basically an experiment and a project that continues to gain steam. You're going to start hearing some homegrown ads for, you know, things like the, if you can even see some of the links and stuff on the website for nosweatshop.com apparel. And we're going to do some things with some, you know, at least trusted products and friends that if you need things, you can get them and actually help us a little bit. So you'll start hearing us doing some kind of plug things here and there. In the near future, and things like nosweatshop.com, you know, you'd want to go there anyway. So, hey, that's a win-win, right, if you ask
socially,
me.
I was going to say socially responsible apparel is a good thing.
Right on, right on. Yeah, well, I, you know, unfortunately, you know, it is, it in the world of doing anything, some of it takes a little bit of money. And, you know, we've been expanding like crazy. I mean, your first week was something else, and before we hit this first break, I just wanted to congratulate you on what was a great thing to just kick back and listen to every morning when I got up over here, and every day, you know, it was just, you know, it felt like it's another one of those snowballs that's going to just continue to take off, and, you know, just good on you, man. And so we're going to take this first break, I think, and come back and kind of start digging into stuff a little bit more before we get into our first of two interviews for the day. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Head On.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head On with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head On. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click On Air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head On.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch, and my pal, my buddy, my compadre, my brother-in-arms down in Sydney, Australia, John Fox, is also with us this evening. John, aren't you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. I'm here, man. I tell you, I don't know if you caught this thing on Common Dreams, but the official gift list to the Bush administration has been released. And these are like, you know, gifts from their friends. And this is also at 12thharmonic.net, a link to it. And I will have all this stuff up at the Horn and Fourth Estate Radio a bit later. Let's see. A sniper rifle, 6 jars of fertilizer, and I love this one, a copy of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook, where among the presents foreign leaders have given George Bush, they're clearly trying to tell him something.
Say that again. What were the gifts?
A sniper rifle. This is just the start of it. 6 jars of fertilizer, a copy, and a copy of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook. Okay. Let's see. There's. I'll scan down and get some more here. There were whips, a collection of guns. The president received a startling array of weapons, including assorted daggers and a machete from Gabon. He got the braided whip with a wooden handle from the Hungarian prime minister. The Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook, a gift from the Sultan of Brunei, and some tips on how to use some of those implements in a tight spot.
That is too much.
Oh, my God. That's just insane.
That is just too much.
I am just blown away, man. I am just blown away. And you know, the first thing that I heard when I heard this on another radio program this morning, I heard whips, and I automatically thought of Bush and Condi, but that's a whole other situation. But this seems to be, like, pretty much a huge amount of the content of the gifts that the administration has received from foreign leaders. And, I mean, do you think these are symbolic gestures, Bruce?
Yes, I do. Actually, even if they weren't, I would say that they have to be. a sniper rifle?
Yep.
From where was the sniper rifle from?
Here I'm bringing up now the Common Dreams page here. Let's see. A sniper rifle. I'm looking for it. But I'll see if I can find it. But it says, but Mr. Cheney also received presents clearly intended to enhance his gentler, fun-loving side. A quote-unquote happy day clock from the Swiss president, gold silk pillows, scented candles, and a pottery incense burner, the Jordanians again. It is apparent that a lot of foreign dignitaries do not do much research before buying gifts. President Bush, a reformed drunk, was given a cellar of wine over the course of 2004.
It's aimed. Nobody sent him an idiot guide to being a president, right?
I think
that's all the rage over in the Middle East. But anyway.
Oh man, it's just. Oh.
That's too much.
It is too much, man. And I mean, just aside from the absurdity of just the gift giving anyway, with all these people, it's like, But that's neither here nor there. But I mean, you know, I mean, the worst case scenario, survival handbook. I mean, come on. And I mean, in a way, I'm kind of thankful that someone sent him that, because it's, you know, saying, look what you're doing. You're burning this place up with war. You're burning this place up with, you know, wasting what resources still remain. You're plundering the planet for ridiculous profits while sucking the actual people dry. I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? Maybe a much more symbolic gesture might have been a bag of ice.
A bag of ice?
A bag of ice to symbolize global warming. Because by the time it got there, it'd be a bag of water, right?
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I see you there. I see you there. I got you there.
Anyway,
I got you there. It's all good.
I know nothing.
Yeah, I like it. No, you know more than they do.
Don't say that, man. Don't say that. That's too scary.
What?
Oh, nothing. I was just thinking about, you know, the fact that this guy completely denies basically every tenet of reality and facet of reality that exists. Maybe, instead, we should send him a symbolic gesture, tickets to Disney World, because that seems to be where the rest of his brain is, if his body isn't, right? La La Land.
La La Land. Hey, man, it looks like we got Jim on line one, and we better bring him on because we've got things scheduled for the next segment. So, hey, Jim, you're on Fourth Estate Radio.
Hey, just for a second here. Bruce, I love that Brokeback Mountain, the Cadillac set that you got on.
Oh, you like that, yeah? Yeah.
I mean, you're a
Well, I figured I'd put the hat on just so that you guys wouldn't see my new perm.
Well, listen, now, wait a minute now. Just as long as you're not wearing what that guy was wearing in that movie called Cruising. Remember that movie?
No, I don't. What was he wearing? Chaps?
Nothing but a jock strap and a Cadillac Stetson, and he beat the hell out of some poor guy in the police station. It was just a terrible thing.
Jim, you better be careful. We'll start using you in promos.
That's fine. I don't mind. You know, I've been told I have a bad accent. Do I have really that bad an accent?
No, not when your speakers aren't on.
Huh?
Nothing.
Oh, I see what you...
No. I can understand you fine. There's
good.
Nothing wrong with your accent.
Well, great. Listen, I've been told there was, but anyway, I just wanted to say, you know, keep it up. And you say after midnight it's Red Hot Ramble?
Oh, yes.
Okay, we'll see what's going on then. I had to cut my speakers down, but I was watching Bats on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just real great intellectual visual pablum.
Okay.
And last night it was Elvira's complete movie, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, that I recommend highly to everybody. Let me tell you something.
Right,
generally, it had those breastworks around Richmond. Grant would have naked, never taken the city.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much for that. And we will catch up with you when we go free for all after midnight, I reckon.
Red Hot Ramble.
You better stay
ready.
Up for that, Jim.
Huh?
Yeah, what?
I said you better stay up for that.
Oh, I'll manage to. Don't worry.
Okay.
Like I say, it's hard. This summertime's just hell on people who sleep in coffins. We'll talk
it
to you later.
It certainly is. Okay.
All right, man, enjoy the bats. And that was Jim, and we will, I know we'll hear from him when we go free for all. Anyway, so Bruce, after we come back, we're going to be going shortly here to a break, but when we come back, we're going to have, who is our special correspondent, or are you holding that till afterwards?
Well, that would be Deborah Kelly. She actually attended this event today and recorded a bunch of great audio, which at some point we're going to put it together, probably some point this weekend, into a half an hour downloadable news piece on the Southeast Social Forum. Really fantastic event. There were organizers there from all over the place. So she's going to be here to tell us all about that and preface an interview that she did with a guy from the Southwest Union. So yeah, so look forward to that. I know we're rapidly approaching our break time. Let's go ahead and do that. If you want, John, we'll go ahead and take that break. And all right, you listen to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network with Bruce Birch, myself, and John Fox down there in Sydney, Australia. If you wanted to get in on the show after the top of the hour, you can do that by calling 1-877-443-2366 or visit us online, headonradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Idiot, bastard son, the father's a Nazi and Congress today. The mother's a hooker somewhere in L.A. The idiot bastard's son, I'm bending to perish in back of a car.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Traffic. All this traffic. When will it end? Doesn't it seem like there are more cars on the road every day?
As our population continues to grow, our daily commute isn't the only thing changing. Rapid population growth around the world threatens our quality of life in other ways. It endangers the environment, economic development, even the future health of our children. U.S. support for voluntary family planning programs worldwide improves everyone's quality of life and helps slow population growth. Find out how you can help increase support for these crucial programs. We're Population Action International, working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Wow, that's pretty epic. Oh, I love that. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, everybody. A grandiose bit of music for a special guest. I'm going to just toss this straight over to Bruce over there in North Carolina, who has our special correspondent with an interview. And take it away, Bruce.
All right. Thank you, John. You are back with Fourth Estate Radio. Thanks, John. And sitting with me, I have Deborah Kelly, who actually attended the Southeast Social Forum down in Durham, North Carolina, and it got some great interviews down there. We're going to be putting together a piece, about a half an hour news piece on the event, and have it available for download at some point. But Deborah attended the event and was down there all day today. Deborah, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Hey.
first of all, tell us a little bit about what it was like there and some of the workshops that were available, et cetera.
Well, it was very welcoming to be there, especially because I walked in through the door and knew about half the people that were registering folks. And we're lucky enough to be involved with quite a few things here in Greensboro that have to do with social justice issues. And these were some of the same folks that volunteered to put on the Southeast Social Forum. So it was very cool. Walked in through the door and got a packet kind of talking about the workshop descriptions. And just to give you a flavor for what was going on, I got there like at 11:30 this morning. And at 11:45, they had about 12 different workshops. And you had to pick from one of those 12 different workshops in order to go to just one of them, which I found to be kind of a bummer because there were so many different things going on. We had, the people from the Highlander Center there doing the some work with the internally displaced persons from Katrina. We had Youth the Vote and Making Elected Officials Accountable. We had Interactive Art Against the Silence of Violence. We had a couple of other ones which were really good. I wanted to go to the one that was called Justice Reinvestment, and it was being put on by the Ordinary People Society. And it was a workshop on the returning the right to vote and sentencing and drug policy and what it was doing to our communities of color all over the United States. So that's just kind of a, you know, small flavor of the workshops that they had going on there.
So would you characterize the event as being a very much about social justice and organizing? Or?
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what it was about. It had a who's who of people that are doing work in the Southeast. Even the workshop that I went to had people from the Southwest, from San Antonio, Texas. And but we had people from the Highlander Center. We had people from the Racial Justice Campaign in Georgia. We even had an organization called Atlanta Palestine Solidarity, Mississippi, and Miami Worker Center. So just representation from different organizations across the Southeast. And the diversity that we had included, things like the Appalachian Women's Alliance and along with everything else. So
let me ask you this real quick. Before we get over to this interview, which I want to, we definitely want to run here in just a second. But I wanted to ask you this, because I've heard on a number of radio programs and other places that that there really isn't any organization on the left. Would you like to, because you were there amongst all these organizers today, what was their feeling about organization in the social justice and on the left?
I guess I'm a little bit confused about the question. Organization on the left, as that we're not organized, is that what you're referring to?
That's what I've been told a number of occasions, yes.
Okay. Well, obviously I don't agree. Not that you do either. But there were so many organizations, and I think that what becomes overwhelming, and I was talking to a friend of mine, we kind of arrived at the same time, and we're standing there looking at the list of workshops that they have and going, it's not about even saying, this is going to be better quality than this over here, but you have organizations such as the Mississippi Workers Center doing a workshop on human rights in the Deep South, which would have been amazing to go see, and then you have the Miami Workers Center doing a workshop on gentrification and the fight for urban land reform. So absolutely organized, and I think that one of the things that we were talking about at the forum is how a venue such as this then allows you the opportunity to network and find out what other organizations are doing. So there's a lot of diversity out there, and there's a lot of networking that needs to happen in order to have a better global view of what other people are doing in other areas of the country.
Tell us about the interview we're about to listen to.
Bueno, this was the first workshop that I decided to go to, and I think that I decided to go to this one in particular because it had to do with, the title of it was Climate, Environmental Justice, and the Gulf of Mexico, and it was being put on by the Southwest Workers Union. So it was touted as being that it would examine the connection between petroleum energy, the impacts on climate and environmental racism, and the environmental justice struggles in the U.S. and Mexico. And because I've been doing so much work with the immigrant community for the past 7 years, one of the research that we've done obviously states that a trade treaty such as NAFTA is going to impact environmental issues, whether it be south of the border and in the United States. And this workshop did that beautifully. It kind of tackled the whole thing and came up with the correlations where they're supposed to be. So it intrigued me, and it was worthwhile. It was a worthwhile workshop there.
So the gentleman's name?
Genaro Lopez Rendon, and I don't know how to say that in English the right way, but I mean his name is he's actually second generation from San Antonio, so he's part of the community of San Antonio that's been there for a while now, and has been doing work down there for a little while.
Okay, let's go ahead and run that interview if you could, Agnes, and we'll be back with you as soon as it's done.
Genaro, what is your last name again?
Lopez Rendon.
Lopez Rendon. Hyphenated last name?
Yes.
Speaking to our Latino ancestry?
Yes.
Tell me the name of your organization, kind of the history of it, and the kind of work that you guys do.
Okay. Southwest Workers Union is an 18-year-old organization based in San Antonio, Texas. We work on a couple of different areas of strategic organizing. One being organizing workers, specifically public school workers like the cafeteria workers, the custodians, the bus drivers, really the low-income workers that are in the school districts. We also work on environmental justice. We've been taking on a military base in San Antonio, Kelly Air Force Base, that has polluted a Latino community in the southwest part of San Antonio. So a large problem with contamination impacts on people's health, and then also the question of bringing this community back to life through revitalization. Another strategic area of work that we do is focusing and empowering our youth. So we have a youth program that we run throughout the year at Southwest Workers Union. We also do a lot of work around the U.S.-Mexico border, really looking at that line that divides the global south and the global north. And the situations that have occurred along the border, specifically after NAFTA. The over 5,000 people have died trying to cross that border. Over 400 women have died in Ciudad Juarez because of the violence that also increases because of these type of free trade agreements. So we're able to see goods and commerce and money cross our borders freely, but yet we're seeing our own brothers and sisters dying in our backyard. So it's, you know, it's definitely a serious issue, and we focus on building bridges with our sister organizations in Mexico and across the Southwest. Another area of organizing is around developing and building our membership and the leadership of that comes from those members. So really an educational branch of the organization that looks at trainings, at curriculums, and making those connections between our local struggles, the struggles that are happening nationally, and the struggles that are happening internationally. They're not separated, they're connected. And the last piece of our work is networking. And networking for movement building. And that's why we're here, you know, this weekend at the Southeast Social Forum. That's why we're part of organizing the Border Social Forum that's going to be coming up in October. And also the Gulf Coast Conference is going to be looking at oil, energy, and the impacts of climate change. That's going to be on September 7th through the 9th in San Antonio.
Can you tell me a little bit about the information that you are trying to get across in a training such as the one that you did today?
Well, today we were looking specifically at the impacts around the Gulf Coast of Mexico, the impacts that happen here in the U.S. and the impacts that happen in Mexico as well, and looking at the lifeline of oil. from the time that it's extracted, through all the steps that it takes, through refinement, through combustion, through transportation, through distribution. It's a whole lifeline of oil, ending up with the last step being the impacts of our climate, the impacts on our earth. And one of the things that you have to notice also throughout each one of these steps of oil is that communities are being impacted through each one of these steps. Whether it be the extraction that's happening in the Campeche Bay in Mexico that's impacting those indigenous communities, or the refining that's happening in Corpus Christi or Houston or Louisiana, that again, the communities that you find around these refineries are poor communities, working class communities, and majority people of color communities as well, that feel not only the burden of living in the shadows of these industries, but also when you look at this, at the last step, which is the impacts on the climate, then again, it's those poor communities, those working class communities and communities of color, because of lack of resources, that will be more impacted by the changing of the climate than will an affluent community, because they're able to adjust, they're able to buy what they need, they're able to fly out of the city where they were. And I think that was very evident when we saw Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. And we saw those pictures on the news of the African American communities and the Latino communities that were left behind because they didn't have the resources to make it out. So it is a question of economics when it comes to the changing of the climate. It's not only a scientific question, but it's about putting that human face to the impacts of climate change.
Okay, and furthermore, one of the things that impressed me about the presentation that you guys just did, that it's not just about the communities of color that are impacted by climate change, but the communities of color that are impacted by the pollution and the side products that come out of the extraction and the processing of oil, whether it be Bahia of Campeche that you were talking about, but you were also talking about the transportation side of things, where there were people, African-American people, that were being impacted by the pollution. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yes. Well, when we talk about transportation, it's, you know, 90% of the oil that's extracted in Mexico is refined in the U.S. So in order to transport that, then you need ports of entry, or you need pipelines that bring it from Mexico over here. So again, those major ports of entry is people of color, poor communities that are impacted by that. Then when you're distributing with the product, the oil, the gas, the natural, whatever it might be, to power the different things that we need, that we use, then again, those transportation sites and pipelines are also passing through our communities. So, I mean, again, each step of this process is a disproportionate impact on those disenfranchised communities, poor people of color communities. And the reality of it is that, you know, we have to deal with each one of those steps in different ways, but the impact is, you know, just to be blunt about it, it's about racism. And it's about environmental racism and what our communities have to deal with every day, because we are poor, because we don't have the money, because we don't have the political clout. Then we have to organize and unify and fight, you know, each step of that way. You know, if it was like one of the brothers said in Martha's Vineyard, then we wouldn't be dealing with the, you know, that situation. That community would have definitely been cleaned up. The site would have been moved, you know, and that is the reality of what we deal with. No? So our communities, people of color communities, have historically been impacted by polluting industries in our community. And we have to pick, you know, work in the polluting facility because we have to survive, but then what comes at the end of that?
Exactly.
And unfortunately, it's death or sickness,
right,
that comes with that. So, you know, it's kind of like that, mm-hmm, that balance, I guess you want to, if we can call it that.
One of the things that I always correlate in reference to communities of color and having a voice is, I'm from Puerto Rico, and the whole thing that happened in Vieques about getting the bombing out of Vieques is something that I find a little bit ironic, because I live in North Carolina now, and what they wanted to do was change the bombing from Puerto Rico to North Carolina. Well, that didn't pass because it was in North Carolina, you know, and it was going to be close to the beach, where people have huge homes, multi-million-dollar homes, and I thought that was a murmur that was squashed immediately. But Puerto Rico had to battle and listen to all the why are you complaining and whining. But North Carolina, talk about it coming to the United States, the mainland, you know what I'm saying? Unless it's in impacting another community of color somewhere, which is what will happen.
Yeah.
you know, so I can relate.
And we've worked with those communities in Vieques as well. We've been dealing with the military base in San Antonio. You know, we were there. We've been to Vieques several times supporting that struggle. And one of the proposals that came after they were able to, stop the Navy and get them out of Vieques in May of 2003 was that there was a proposal to move that also to the coast of Texas.
It just amazes me, you know? It just amazes me. So what happened with that?
Well, it was squashed. It was not moved. But, you know, in Vieques, that struggle was also an example of how people coming together can make that change.
Exactly.
They were able, through civil disobedience, by thousands of people getting arrested, by people putting their lives on the line on a daily basis in that community, that really pushed the Navy to get out of there. Now what they're dealing with is now the same situations that we're dealing with in San Antonio, trying to clean up the toxics that the military left behind, trying to get claim back to their land. You know, that's the land of the people, where now you're having a huge influx of corporations moving in there to buy beachfront property to develop a resort. And also about the health of the communities.
Exactly.
That's the main piece that we cannot forget about, is that when you have chemical presence in your community, then it has an impact on the people's health.
Mm-hmm.
And the health is something that's priceless and something that we have to value, because, you know, we only have one life, and we only have one mother, and we only have one father. And those are the type of things that mean the most to our communities. It's about the safety and the longevity of our families.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about is so tell me, why do this type of educational work? What does it have to do with the workers' union that you represent?
Which type of educational work?
The type of education, the oil.
The oil.
See.
The way that it connects to us is that we're in San Antonio. We're an hour and a half from the coast, from Corpus Christi, where six refineries exist. Plus, Southwest Workers Union, one of our strengths is being able to converge communities, to converge organizations, and to build movement. So that's our contribution to the communities along the Gulf Coast. That's our contribution to the communities in Mexico, is to really build a binational convergence that's able to, one, break the isolation that communities have of your day-to-day struggle, realize that you're connected with many more communities, and that through those connections, we're able to push shoulder to shoulder and make a lot of those policy changes or changes of putting monitors or other things like that. And we feel that we'll be able to advance hundreds of miles from where we're at now when our communities are lined up shoulder to shoulder, when we have the understanding of what everybody's dealing with, and we also know what we're all trying to accomplish and push for.
And I think it's to me, it's very important to keep in mind that globalization of the marketplace, or whatever you want to call it, is something that happens with the people as well, and that just as corporations can form binational collaboratives, that we as workers must be doing the same type of work. And that we need to look at the sending communities and the receiving communities, and we need to look at everything in between. Because from some of the work that we do here in North Carolina is we look at the sending communities, but also Ciudad Juarez. I mean, it's one of the major midpoints, I would say, of people coming in to the United States, and whether they go through Ciudad Juarez or decide to go someplace else, there's a lot that's happening in Ciudad Juarez that is very reflective of the globalization part of it. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about also is, just how NAFTA has impacted all of those things. I think that it's really important that we highlight that NAFTA, who is benefiting right now, is the upper 2% of the Mexican society right now. And that unless we start looking at organizing the workers in Mexico as well, that's the way it's always going to be. We can put as many trade policies into place as we want to, but unless we're looking at, well, number one, not just looking out for number one, but also looking out for the equity in these trade alliances, but also looking at how it's being manifested in the other countries such as Mexico. Do you have anything to comment on that?
Well, I would just say that it is important to build those bridges, not only across the border with the U.S. and Mexico, but internationally and around the globe, that, you know, we need to globalize our struggle. We need to globalize our movement. And the proposal in NAFTA And, you know, the recent things that we've seen over the last couple of months around these racist immigration bills that are being pushed in Washington, we've seen millions of people take the streets. But we've also seen the repression that's coming from the federal government. George Bush's proposal, where now there are proposals to send 6,000 more military troops to the U.S.-Mexico border to build this wall of death across the whole border between the U.S. and Mexico. That, you know, these are all very racist policies that are just being directed to the southern border of the United States. Yet we have borders all around this country. There's the northern border, there's the Pacific border, there's the Atlantic border, there's the borders around the island of Hawaii, there's the borders around the island of Puerto Rico. You know, where's the policy and where's the push to make those, militarized borders?
Exactly.
So, you know, there is a disproportionate impact, a racist impact that's being dealt to the people that are coming from Latin America or specifically to the southern border. And these policies that are being pushed, it's really about sustaining the capitalism of the United States, to having these poor workers living in fear so that they can be exploited by the corporations here in the U.S. or in other parts of the country. So, yes, these type of free trade agreements like NAFTA or CAFTA, or the one that's being pushed between the U.S. and South Korea, that these are all about exploiting the workforce to make a couple more people rich.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about widening, and the gap is widening between the rich and the poor because of these type of agreements. So yes, we need to be building those bridges. We need to be attending events like the World Social Forum, like the U.S. Social Forum, which is about weaving our movements and building that solid connection that's going to take us where we need to go, and that's justice.
Perfecto. Thank you so much for your time, Genaro. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Debbie, for doing that and for going down there to that event and talking with Gerardo. I believe that's how you say that. Say his first name again.
Genaro.
Genaro, that's it. Okay. John, would you like to get in on this, John?
Well, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how this part of our society just always seems to be able to lead the way and being able to connect the dots and keep so much context when it comes. When he was talking about Deb, the whole idea that, you know, there are all these things that are broken in our society which make it hard for the people who lack the ability to defend their own rights. You know, it's like it's all this distraction stuff and constantly looking through that to move forward to get these things changed, because it's basically just trying to disable people from using their voice is kind of what I thought he was saying there.
Yeah, I think that, the more that you talk about social justice, the more that you realize how much it's all interrelated anyway. And that I think that the argument that you get from the other side a lot of the time is trying to divide that up in chunks. And I think it's as much a human reaction as it is anything else, in that if you think about it holistically and try to deal with it holistically, it almost becomes overwhelming. But unless you look at it that way, you're really not going to make a dent in the work that you need to be doing. And I think that, you know, as always, when it comes to making a buck, you can see that the corporations get it. The corporations get the globalization of it. The corporations get how important it is to translate documents. The corporation gets how important it is to advertise to people in their own language. Corporations get it. They know how to maximize their dollar. And we keep trying to, look at it holistically and look at it at how it's all interrelated. And really, you know, when you look at it that way, then you can come up with holistic solutions as well.
I think you're right. And I don't know. I lived in San Antonio for quite a few years and did music there and lived with Mexican family. And there's something that hasn't been lost in the culture, where I think you still can keep that holistic kind of outlook, and I think we can learn from that in a big way. Thank you very much for that. Fantastic interview.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Debbie. Now, the one thing that's really surprised, or I guess it wasn't surprising, is just that, you know, we need to hear more and more about how the corporate structure within the United States and outside the United States as well, especially down in Mexico, which was the first country to really get robbed and raped by the U.S. corporations and to get used up through the effects of NAFTA, which, as you said, enriched the upper 2% of the Mexican population. Is that right?
Sure.
Okay. You know, I think it's important for us to remember that the poor populations in all of these areas, especially, you know, even in the United States, if you'll, you know, once we get the other news report put together and put it up on headonradionetwork.com, in that particular report, there was also, or in one of the clips that I listened to this afternoon, there was a lady talking about the fact that there are, that, you know, that these chemical plants are in higher concentrations in areas that are predominantly black, predominantly people of color.
Oh, sure. And I mean, and it is, because it's a completely disenfranchised community. And you know that if they complain, nobody's going to listen unless they do it in huge numbers or get organized like we're trying to do. It's just easier to dismiss poor communities of color than it is somebody that you know is going to be your neighbor at some point or another. Then it's harder to face that person. You don't have to face the communities of color on a daily basis when you're making those decisions.
So Debbie Kelly, I'm sorry.
It's sorry. It reminds me of that Simpsons episode where there's that really kind of racist legislation, and then all of a sudden it ends up affecting Apu, and the whole community suddenly is having this massive shift because they didn't realize that their blind racism and jingoism was actually going to end up sending one of their, you know, best features of their community away from the community that they've been serving for years.
Way to wrap it up with the Simpsons analogy.
I did want to...
Pop culture. Baby.
Right. I wanted to put in a final plug for the workshop or the conference that Renato was talking about in San Antonio, Texas, on September 7th through the 9th. They're having the conference down there that's called Weaving Gulf Coast Voices and Struggles, Communities Confronting Oil, Energy, and Climate Change, and talking about all the other issues that he was talking about. And if you want more information about that, you can email jillj@igc.org, jillj@igc.org, and I'm sure that Bruce is going to put that somewhere where people can get that information. I want to thank Renato again for the time that he gave me today. He was so passionate about what he was talking about. He was just about the easiest interview ever.
Thank you, Debbie, for joining us here on Fourth Estate Radio.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
I'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
And we are right hard at the top of the hour. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox, Bruce Birch, and special correspondent Deborah Kelly. We will be back after the top of the hour news. Hope you join us.
See ya.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack tonight at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. As of today, at least 2,501 U.S. troops have been killed in combat since the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003. A poll released Friday by CNN says a narrow majority of the country wants a timetable for troops to come home from Iraq. 47% of those polled say the troop withdrawal should begin within a year or less. However, the U.S. House today rejected a timetable to withdraw troops. The vote on the non-binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released by the Pentagon this afternoon says U.S. Special Forces gave Iraqi prisoners only bread and water for more than 2 weeks and used harsh, unauthorized interrogation practices against others. The federal report calls such incidents wrong but not illegal. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There's also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. Homeland Security warns most U.S. cities and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. Maine announced today it was beginning to test migratory birds for the avian flu. Maine's plan is modeled on the one in Alaska, where it's believed the first U.S. case will be found. Wildfires are burning in Colorado, Texas, Arizona, and Alaska. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a fire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, more than 7,000 acres have been scorched. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Ford says it will funnel millions of dollars into three factories in Mexico, the additional investment south of the border, as well as construction of a new plant in an undisclosed location, is billed as part of the automaker's economic turnaround effort. Japan today unexpectedly lost two key votes before the International Whaling Commission. Japan says it will consider quitting the international regulatory group if commercial whaling in the Pacific is not resumed. Apple Computer is investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. A subsidiary of Schlumberger announced it has been fined nearly $20 million. The subsidiary of the world's largest oil field services company was charged with making out fake visa applications for foreign workers on U.S. ships in the Gulf of Mexico. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 was down 5 at 1252. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Second
second hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is conversation radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4 head on. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
That's right, P1 louder and get on the phone, ring 1-877-4 head on. You got about 30 minutes before we get into our next interview, but. And while we wait for maybe a couple of phone calls to come in, Bruce Birch, you said you have a news story for us.
I did.
Didn't you? Don't do that to me, Bruce.
I very well may have a news story. I just didn't realize that I did. I just I was actually asking you for one, but that's okay. We're gonna check out a couple. You've got some stuff.
Okay. Well, we'll go on to Savage. Agnes, I'll give you a second to get that clip ready for us. Bob sent this to me this morning in my email, and Mr. Savage, that right wing scum of a, I can't even call him a right wing scum. He's just kind of like generally scum of a talk show host, and. I'm no Hillary Clinton fan, as you know, but I would never have said this. Hit it, Agnes.
Race baiting. Oh, it's going to be a horrible campaign when Hillary starts. And oh, my God. We're liable to have outright race war in America when she starts running. They're crazy. They'd stir up a race war, a civil war in the country to get that Harridan elected. There's no question we're going to have race war, race riots in America. They'll start in Blacks Can't Vote. They didn't get in. The booth was closed. They got there 2 minutes late. It was closed only for black people. I don't understand how they can get away with it. You mean you want to talk about a hate crime? Her campaign will be one long hate crime against white people. I don't know why black people buy into that. I don't get it. Blacks, I met, are smart. I don't understand this. They got to know they're being used by the Clintons. I'm not saying vote for Republican. Don't get me wrong. You know, I wouldn't vote for a Republican by and large. But for God's sakes, you're going to go for that plantation speech again? Here we go again?
What?
Let me say this, John. I want to paraphrase what he said. You ready?
I hate everybody. I hate them.
There. That's what he said. Okay.
Okay, and so he's but all right, man. I'm not over there, and I've never caught this guy's show. Okay, but he says there I would never vote for a Republican. What does this guy claim he is?
He is probably one of those birchers. Probably one of those people who like believes that it's all the Jews, and you know who knows what he believes. I mean, you know, he's founded something called the Patrick Henry. I think it's the Patrick Henry Society or something where. He is of the ultra right. I mean, he doesn't outright belong that I'm aware of to the John Birch Society or anything like that. But I wouldn't doubt it, and I would venture to guess also that that this Patrick Henry Society that he has founded probably is as right wing as those other. I really don't know how to describe them besides that they're just hateful.
Our producer says that the guy is supposed to be an independent. An independent what? Because that's scary stuff, man. You know, what I found really scary buried inside that was a very sly connection of racism and voter disenfranchisement in a very, very dark light. And I found that, you know, it was as though trying to kick a door open so that if the voting machines and whatnot come up in this election as a way to just discount it. I smell right wing seeds of plausible deniability being planted in it within that. It scared the crap out of me when I first heard it.
Well, Yeah, I don't doubt it. I mean, you know, his thing also is that he's the one who coined the term Islamofascists. If that
right, and we you brought a clip of this guy on months ago, I remember, and it was just another real kind of what's bizarre is he even used the term race baiting, but to me, what he's doing is race baiting. You know, again, right wing opposite world tactic laid right out, and he played a couple of interesting cards in that statement. And I mean, I think it's a nut job. And, you know, I don't want Hillary as our nominee. I've been very open about that. And we've got some stuff for after our second interview of the evening. More reason why I don't think she should be our candidate, because I do not think she's a Democrat, just like I didn't really think Bill Clinton was a Democrat. I thought he was a centrist Republican. And I am just absolutely, you know, but I could not have, I would, I am going to do everything I can up until the next presidential election to hope that there will be a better candidate selected than Hillary. But I wouldn't go and do this, and I think it's a very, very, very dirty play.
I totally agree. Now, this guy... you know, we played his clip, but, you know, I mean, in reality, you know, you would be surprised. I mean, this guy is on stations coast to coast, and you would be surprised at how many people listen to him and take what he says as, you know, literally. I mean, it's like he issues these marching orders. And you remember, John, you watched V for Vendetta, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, do you remember the radio host or the television host in that movie?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, this is the Savage is like him exactly.
Okay. I got you. I mean, you know, I'm so glad that Bob sent that to me because it just, you know, I talk about, you know, waking up, not even first cup of coffee, and you know, I play that, and I'm like, ding, okay, I'm up. This is where the very thing that we do here every weekend and you're now doing every day, I think, is so important because, you know, you have these guys nationwide able to spew this stuff without you know, and they're given all this wattage to just spew hateful and I think – misguiding statements, you know? And what I think is interesting, Bruce, is I heard also, which woke me up this morning, I'm gonna christen a new name, and I think it's gonna be the Wonder Twins of Democracy. And that goes to Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy. They are taking on themselves with their own firms, are suing Diebold and all the voting machine companies to get the books open to prove that we've been being ripped off for years.
Good. We should try to get Mike or Bobby on at some point, I think.
I've already emailed them.
Good.
Let's see what happens, because, you know, there's enough credibility, and, I mean, if the Democrats aren't going to get off their, if they're not going to get off their ass and take on this problem of the fact that our democracy has been hijacked effectively, right, if they're not going to do it, I like the idea that these two guys, you know, not only was Bobby on, you know, telly a couple of weeks ago and probably stuck in some of the worst situations, you know, 3-on-1 interviews and only giving him like, you know, stabs of being able to get any kind of point out. It's a long form issue. The idea of those two guys possibly arguing this thing out on a courtroom floor just gives me goosebumps. And well, with that, know, I think...
I was just going to say we need to probably take a break.
All right, man. Yeah. We're going to take this break. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. We're chatting at headonradionetwork.com, streaming on the White Rose Society, and he's having his fundraiser. And Bruce and I will be right back.
Remember, I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution,
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil, that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
John Fox in Sydney, Australia here. Bruce Birch up there in North Carolina. And We just might as well get back into a little bit of the free form before we have our next guest at the bottom of the hour. Bruce Birch, you still hanging on there with your fingernails?
I'm hanging on with my fingernails dragging along the edge of the concrete. By the edge of my, okay. I went to see, just if we're doing freeform, I just want to turn everybody on to this. I went to see the Prairie Home Companion movie this afternoon. And,
what you were talking about here, I'm a little lost.
Well, you know the show, Garrison Keillor. You've heard of the show, John, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, essentially, it is a movie of one of the shows. And I mean, it's a fiction now. It's not like a documentary like they did some sort of behind the scenes thing. But there was Meryl Streep was in the movie, Garrison Keillor, Lindsay Lohan, a number of people were in the movie, including the entire cast of the normal Prairie Home Companion radio program. It was basically a depiction of what could be the very last show of Prairie Home Companion.
Okay. So, well, I've never actually caught it, but I'll check it out.
Well, the show itself, now, I have always personally enjoyed Garrison Keillor's monologues on Lake Wobegon and where the men are men, the women are strong, and the children are above average.
Yeah. I've heard that stuff.
And then he has, various musical guests and that kind of thing. But it was a really interesting show, movie. And if you're a fan of the show, you won't be disappointed by the movie. The only thing that really struck me was there was a little bit of a cheesiness to it that probably was because I'm still 36, perhaps. I think, maybe. But.
Right on. Well, while we're throwing in movie picks, Gail and I actually went and saw the new of the X-Men series, and have to say, if you're if you read the comic book or whatever, and kind of dug that whole thing, I reckon they did a bloody good job and some very non-overstated, brilliantly done effects. I just won't say anymore. I'm glad I finally saw one on the big screen. It was good, bloody brilliant, and some interesting, as usual, as comic books have been doing as of late, films based on comic books have been, very good vehicles for some current social commentary, Some interesting little, sidebar he things within it.
Sure. We need to get out and do more movie reviews, I guess, is the.
Well, and just sometimes you got to get out, and if nothing else, it was a good 2 hours of a very fun ride,
Sure.
Can't be serious all the damn time.
That's absolutely the truth.
Sometimes I feel like my head's going to explode. So, coming up in the next half hour, we have this journalist and you found this gentleman. What is his name again? Before we have him on, and I feel so all embarrassed.
he actually seemed to be a really nice fellow, and when I originally talked to him, we had an interesting conversation about his just what's been going on. His name's John Keillor, Caylor, John Keillor. He's from down in Florida, and has been some investigative journalism related to some of the abuse that's been going on down in Florida. Now, he apparently got a hold of some documents and got arrested. I'm gonna let him tell his story when he comes on.
If anyone wants to have a look, they can go to insider-magazine.com, and I do have an image and a link on the Head On Radio Network site now. And so you can actually see the documents and some Not very, very easy images there. So, yeah, this should be an interesting story.
And you know, he's also really good friends with the gentleman we interviewed yesterday, who Wayne Madsen. So that, you know, we're all in this together, and John Kaler is another one who definitely has sort of gone out on the edge of journalism to find stories that people don't want reported, especially those who are in power and you know, down in Jeb world. So.
And that's one of the reasons why we are here, to try and get some of those stories out, at least a few if we can. So I reckon that's going to be good. And then for the third hour, we're going to go into just free form open phones. I'm going to get into Hillary Clinton just a little bit, if not a lot, and get into who exactly is paying her way. And is she really a Democrat? And I think that's a big issue with where we are in our situation at the moment. I don't necessarily agree that the people that say that they are, you know, looking out for us are looking out for us. And so there's a really interesting piece, and we'll get into that in the last hour. But, Bruce, you got anything else before we go out to the bottom of the hour break?
No.
All right.
No, let's go and take a break, and we'll come back.
Okay, and don't forget, Ben Birch is having his fundraiser at the moment, so go to the WhiteRoseSociety.org or WhiteRoseSociety.org. Drop him whatever you can, you know, give up Domino's for a weekend or something, and throw a couple of dollars his way. He's the hardest working guy in progressive radio. Thank you, Ben. And Bruce and I will be right back with our next guest right after this. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
You mess with my life, so I bought my lips. Even mess with my children, and you're sweeping at my wife. Get off of my back if you want to get out of here alive. Freedom, that's what I want now.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
May I help you?
Hello. Can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello. My name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business, or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way, or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
And you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch. My good buddy John Fox is down under the table. John, you there?
What? What? Under what? Who, where, when? No, not in a long time, man. Not in a long, long time. Anyway, Bruce, so as we're... what are you doing to me? As we're waiting for our guest to ring in, I think I will switch a web page here, and I'll go back to something else that I was going to talk about. If you want to have a look, realnews.org. And they
realnews.org. Okay.
And this is a new resource that we've stumbled upon and looks pretty good so far. And I've sent an email hoping that maybe we can get Mr. Russ Baker, the author of this piece, on the air. And it's 25 Democratic Consultants. Okay? And, you know, you say fairly often on this program that you have a friend that likes to say, follow the money.
Yes.
Okay, that's about.
Let's follow the money.
That's what that's what this piece is about. And Russ Baker just gives a little blurb about him. Says founder of the Real News Project and author of this article is a longtime award-winning investigative journalist and essayist. His work has appeared in many of the world's finest news outlets, and Real News Project is a new organization dedicated to producing groundbreaking investigative reporting on the big stories of our time. It goes on. Jack Quinn served as Vice President Gore's chief of staff and later as counsel to President Clinton. Now he is a partner in a political consulting and lobbying firm with a close friend of Tom DeLay. And together they have represented clients who want to drill in fragile areas of Alaska, put the screws to already beleaguered American creditors, and prevent the introduction of more healthy dairy substitutes in school lunches. This is a Democratic consultant. A little further down the old pagey-poo, we have, let's see, the pattern accelerated markedly under the Clinton administration, which, despite some reformist tendencies, often aided the big business agenda, easing domestic regulations and passing international trade agreements that tended to unshackle the large corporation. Some of these changes were clearly in the public interest, such as streamlining cumbersome and often antiquated bureaucratic processes. But many others were not, lowering environmental thresholds and diminishing governmental oversight. Once the Democrats turned into the opposition, key Clinton figures found a home in offering their advertising, public relations, and arm-twisting skills to industry trade associates and corporations. They retained their links to the party and have lived a kind of dual life ever since, moving effortlessly from corporate work to campaign work and back. The friendliness with big business has escalated under the reign of Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who has assembled his own so-called K Street Cabinet, named after the street where the lobbying hordes are headquartered. So,
hordes?
Again.
Did you say hordes?
Hordes.
Oh, I thought you said something else. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'll just This is just the beginning, and I do hear that our guest is on the line, so I'm going to wrap this up. But just, you know, these are the first bits, and I'm telling you, this is not a short piece. And this morning, I'm scrolling through it. Gail posted this on 12thharmonic.net a couple days ago, or last night, or something, and I hadn't really gotten to look through it, except for her blurb, and then my head just began to hurt. And we'll go through some more of these a little bit later. Bruce, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes, indeed, I would, John. Thank you for that bit of information. You know, it is really kind of amazing how the ties that separate us are almost stronger than the ties that connect us. I don't know how, maybe that made sense. I don't know. On the line with us is John Kaler. Now, John is the editor and one of the founders of InsiderMagazine.com. John, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm tired, real tired. Kind of worn out from all the torture and the badgering I took in the Bay County Jail this week.
Well, tell us a little bit about what happened, John.
Well, you know, welcome to the program,
John. I'm an investigative journalist, and I've been abandoning the Bush family's side for many years, starting back with Iran-Contra. And I was trying to get some public records on some death cases. You know, I found the Ray Lemmy suicide photos that the police said didn't exist over in Valdosta. For 2 years, they told the media that there were no photographs or anything, no crime scene photographs. And, you know, I found those. And, of course, Wayne wrote the big story about what started it all, what Wayne Madison kicked it off for me, and we worked together. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I'm digging into. But what we've got is we've got a lot of people in America who are disappearing and then showing up as suicides or accidents. And the police and the medical examiners are saying that there's suicides and the accidents and stuff like this, when in actuality, these people are being murdered, and the police are covering it up. And this is one of the things I was really digging into, is a case like this. And I tried to get some public records, depositions from the court, which linked to a 1989 murder that would absolutely link forward to the 2006 murder of this fisherman by the name of Colvin. His name was Romeo Colvin. And he was associated with the Dixie Mafia, and this Dixie Mafia hitman who'd done quite a bit, a few jobs for the CIA. And
wow.
Make a long story short, the medical examiner, Siebert, who's the same medical examiner who ruled the teenager over at the juvenile prison in Bay County, died of natural causes, the one that was beaten to death. Remember that? The one that's been
on Michael, I can't remember. Yeah, I remember. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, Siebert did the autopsy, and, you know, on this guy, and he said it was natural causes. He didn't tell that the guy had been beaten to death. The dead men don't bruise. And so for months and months, the family had worked with me quietly behind the scenes, had stolen documents that they needed and gotten the autopsy photographs and everything else, and they were devastated by what they found. And so what we found is we found that he had been murdered, and we found that Siebert had lied again. You know, they proved that he lied on the teenager, this Anderson boy, and we found out that Panama City Police Department was covering up another murder. And this is just standard law for these people. I mean, criminals have taken control of our system. We have a private jail. We had the first private jail in the nation, owned by CCA, Corrections Corporation of America. It's a Republican Party who's who. Okay?
Right.
So I went down to get these documents. In court depositions, they had them ready for me, and I read them, and then asked the clerk for the documents, and she said, no, we can't do that because they're not public record, but they belong to the court reporters. And then, to make a long story short, they were trying to claim that that was their work product. Okay, the case was 17 years old. Taxpayers had paid for it 17 years ago for those documents. And so it was just another effort to stymie me, the journalist, or anyone, the public, from getting a hold of records they don't want you to see.
Now, aren't you allowed to make copies?
Yeah, well, you sure are. Let me tell you what the deal is. Okay,
I'm sorry,
what I'm going forward with is the deal is this. around this country, court reporters, okay, are officers of the court, and also in this situation, they pay them, they have a little side deal. The law says that the record's a public record, and they can't charge you any more for it, and that's it. But what they do in this courthouse to maintain the corruption is they have a political patronage system where the court reporters get $3 a page, and the clerk gives it to them. And so next time we have a deposition in a criminal case of someone we want to put away, okay, we get you to change what he said. And that's the record. Now,
holy
the
crap.
Person that's charged with a crime or even in a civil case says, no, no, that's not what happened. Okay, I want to get a copy of the tape that the court reporter had. Well, guess what? You can't get a copy of that because that is their word product. They destroy those tapes, and they just laugh at you. So basically, they tried to get the court reporters to control what's going on. And if they get them, they want them to change something, change a sentence, a paragraph. I mean, that's what's happening. That's why a lot of people in prison is because the record's not right to begin with. And that's your appeal. That's your appeal. So anyway, they didn't want me to have the records. I put up a protest and asked that they be arrested for not providing the records under Chapter 119, which is the Sunshine Law. And so finally, you know, the police got involved, and I asked the police department, you know, the sheriff's department get involved, and then, but they got involved on their side. I was wrong. I'm a journalist, and you don't have any business talking to these people this way. They know the law, and they're not going to supply you the records. And then finally they came around and said, well, we'll let you have a copy of the records. But what we want to do is we want to know what you want copied, and we'll copy them for you, and you can come back in a couple of days and get them. I mean, hell, as an investigative journalist, I mean, what am I supposed to do? I look like a monkey's uncle walking out of there.
Okay, John, can I just sneak in here for a second? Because earlier it almost sounded like you were insinuating, and I don't mean use that word in a bad way, that they were using some sort of intellectual property kind of hook.
That's exactly what they were saying. And that's their case. That's what they're trying to say. That's the case they always argue to the John Q. public that walks in the door. I didn't identify myself as a journalist until later on in this conversation. Okay, and that's when they changed their tune and said, well, they came around and said, well, you can have copies of the documents. At first they said, we need to call a court reporter and see if they'll let you have a copy. So they called upstairs and they said, well, they're not in. You'll have to talk to them when they get back in this coming week and see if they'll let you make copies. And then it transgressed on when they found out I was a journalist, okay, the investigative journalist, then it transpired that, well, we'll let you have the copies. You know, it's got to be our way. And so what they wanted to see is what they wanted to find out what I was digging for. And as a
right.
journalist,
so
I can't.
Is this what led to you being beaten and tortured and incarcerated?
Yes. They told me that if I didn't leave, I would be charged with disorderly conduct. And I said, look, the statute says that I'm allowed to have these records, and I want them now because I came all the way from Mobile, Alabama to get them. And I've been working on this case, and it links to a current murder investigation I'm looking into and for a story. And I want the records, and I don't have to come back next week and have somebody sanitize or censor what I'm trying to get at. It just defeats the whole thing about having the open record statute. I mean, if we can't operate in this country as journalists without fear of reprisal and being arrested and shackled and chained and bound, for getting damn records. I mean, I became an enemy of state because I wanted the records. So what they did is they slammed me up against the wall, jacked me up, and handcuffed me and took me over to the jail. Okay, and they put me in the Bay County Jail and tried to take my nitroglycerin away from me. And, of course, I have a bad heart. And the Bay County Jail is a private jail. It's run by Corrections Corporation of America, which is the National Republican Party. They have real strong ties to the Bush family. And
right.
so they run it like Guantanamo Bay. And so they, you know, I tested, and they put me in the back of the line, took my nitro away from me, finally let me have it after they did an EKG on me. And then I was out of water, couldn't breathe, and wanted to get processed, wanted that phone call, they will not let you make a phone call in this jail until they process you. And they say under Florida law they can take up to 3 days to do that.
Oh, my God. That is so illegal, it's not even funny.
That's right. So they chain me. They cuffed me from behind and chained my ankles and put me in a room without my shoes on, concrete floor, cold room, with no one in it, no place to sit. I had to stand in detention for about 7 hours with no water, just a little sip of water every now and then. No place to use the bathroom, no nothing. The door shut, and I'm having to holler and scream to get somebody's attention to get some water because I'm dehydrated. And the whole object was to dehydrate me and to break me down because the body starts breaking down on concrete under bright lights in no time. So I started banging on the door. And when they started banging on the door, they came around, about seven or eight of them. The supervisor did, this big black guy standing about 6'4", stood in the doorway and shouted in my face. And the rest of the corrections officers tried to get me to hit them. And they taped this, which I'm glad they did. And I told them they were no better than the North Koreans. You know, we no longer, this is the same way the North Koreans and the Chinese do. What they can do is they can kill you without having to touch you. By badgering you, by taking your medicine away, by chaining and shackling you, forcing you to undergo this type of mental and physical torture. And we no longer have a democracy in America. It's just now government by the end of the rule, by the end of a gun barrel. And the citizens need to stand together and stand up to this. And I'm sorry,
sir, what you've been through, I'm just so glad that you've survived to be able to come on and tell us this because, I mean, this. Why is it that you would become an enemy of the state when it seems as though you just were trying to, you know, solve a crime or, you know, do what is basically your job?
That's absolutely right. See, people don't know what's going on downtown. They don't know what's going on in our jails. They don't know what's going on in America. They know that people are getting violent. They're joining gangs. They're joining gangs for protection. They're joining gangs because they're being forced to. We're fast becoming an institutionalized society. Everyone is becoming a criminal. And when criminals control government, this is what they do, is they try to criminalize everyone.
Right.
You know, I told these people, and they're on tape, and by the way, I'm getting the tapes. If they don't erase them before I can get to them, and Wayne Madison is going to give them to the networks because the whole time I'm screaming and hollering at these people, look, you're not going to torture me anymore. I'm a journalist.
Sir, you send them to us, and we'll post them on the web. I've got a good spot to put them, sir. I'll be more than happy.
We'd be more than happy to do that because I'm moving Monday morning to get a writ of protective order on those tapes because you know I told those people I said you know you're no better than the North Koreans, and they're not. And the problem with the whole country. Okay, is by being in jail, you get to see a lot of things that you don't want to see. We've got a throwaway society. We've got a very insensitive system that is nothing but a money machine. They're building private prisons all over this country, and it's the Republican Party. It's Charlie Hilton and those people with the Club for Growth, and that's the president's number one backers and people, and they have their own people is chairman of the privatization committees in the states to take over the jails and the prisons in America. And there's no accountability to anyone except to a nameless, faceless private corporation. Even a judge nowadays, there's no contact with a judge. On a first appearance, you know, the law says you're allowed to go and talk to these people and tell them your problems and explain the reason you're there. I was there for disorderly conduct in an establishment and also for resisting an officer without violence. And I became a criminal, an enemy of the state. And, you know, I'm not allowed to talk to anyone. My phone call was after midnight. They did not want me to talk to the media. I was arrested at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They didn't want me to talk to anyone else in the media. So after midnight, I got my phone call, finally, and then put back in the holding cell. And then it was 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning before I actually got up to a place where I could actually lay down without shackle.
John, what are the extent of your injuries, sir?
Let me tell you, I'm just beat down. I got some black and blue hands and ankles. And the thing of it is, I've had 3 full-blown open-heart surgeries. I've got 7 stents. I sleep on a CPAP machine, but I'm active. I'm active all over the country. And let me tell you, when I banged on the door with my feet and my fist from behind, and my feet and my fist are black and blue from banging on the door. That's what they couldn't stand. They couldn't stand the fact that they had chained and shackled me, but yet I still continued to protest. And, you know, let me tell you, it took a lot out of me. I thought I was going to die right then and there. That's exactly what these people wanted. But, you know, in that last moment, God always comes through. I asked him, I said, God, help me make this. Help me stand up to these people. And, you know, I got strength from my heart like you just wouldn't believe. And I had friends after I went through the first appearance. Had this black judge, his name is Smiley, and he doesn't like me. He was on the legislature's committee for the Chapter 119 revision. I testified there. He didn't like my testimony. The reason why he didn't like my testimony is because I was talking about Hail to St. Marcus, Fleecing the Flock, an article I did for my magazine, my print magazine, talking about this radio preacher, Marcus Bishop and Creflo Dollar, who are aligned with organized crime figures, laundering money and running guns in South Africa and places like that. And Bishop has a cult church, all right, and thousands of members all across the country, him and Creflo Dollar. And they got Lear jets and big long jets. And these people are a criminal organization. And they held a divorce in the middle of the night in Bay County in court. They switched it from Duff County Court to Bay County Court in the middle of the night, and that's what my article was about, just so they could hide the assets of that church from the members of the church so they could split it up, Marcus Bishop and his wife, Scarlett. And so when I was talking and giving testimony to the legislature about changing that asset aspect of the law, 119, the Records Act, this judge got up and said, are you through talking?
And I was, God.
Yes. And then the chairman of the committee of the legislature said, no, he's not through. We want to hear what he has to say. So this is the judge I've got to face. And I've already done a recusal on him.
Wow. What is that exactly?
Well, a recusal is when you ask for a judge to step off the case and put someone else on it because he's biased and prejudiced.
Right. Oh, recusal. Sorry, I've got you now. That's
right.
This is amazing. This is, and so this church was going to be gutted by these people.
Yeah, what they did is they just divided up the assets of the church, and it's one of those Creflo Dollar deals. You've heard of Creflo Dollar. You've heard of Benny Hinn. You've heard of
it. Yeah. Benny Hinn. I've had a bit of a run-in with the Benny Hinn organization, but please go on.
Well, these people have real tight links to the Israeli mafia and also to Mossad. And all they're doing is they're running churches all across this nation under the guise that, you know, they're legitimate things. And their number one sermon, their only sermon, is money, money. Jesus was all about money. And so that's the kind of stuff I do, is I do investigative reports on these people, and they don't like it. There's a lot of different reports on it, and that was what the judge didn't like, is the fact that I exposed their crooked and criminal court in Bay County and how they do things in the 14th Judicial Circuit. This is Bay County is a criminal enterprise. The whole county is. The whole 14th Circuit is a criminal enterprise. And let me tell you how I got started. Got started with George Bush Sr. That's where the home is of his Iran-Contra dealings are. The main Iran-Contra dealings are in the Florida Panhandle in South Alabama.
Right.
In the money laundering facilities, you know, and the people.
Well, John, we're about to come up to the to our news break here in a couple of minutes. Do you mind hanging on till
sure,
after the
ready.
News?
Hey,
man, this is fantastic, and we're going to be back and talk more about things that are making my head spin. here on Fourth Estate Radio, we've got links up to Panama City Police Chief rounds up and jails the homeless. And if you've got anything to say about this, ring in to the program, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. So this thing goes back. About a minute here before we go. So this goes right back to Bush Sr. It's very, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So we're going to be back with John, Bruce, John down here in Sydney. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack tonight at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. As of today, at least 2,501 U.S. troops have been killed in combat since the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003. A poll released Friday by CNN says a narrow majority of the country wants a timetable for troops to come home from Iraq. 47% of those polled say the troop withdrawal should begin within a year or less. However, the U.S. House today rejected a timetable to withdraw troops. The vote on the non-binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released by the Pentagon this afternoon says U.S. Special Forces gave Iraqi prisoners only bread and water for more than 2 weeks and used harsh, unauthorized interrogation practices against others. The federal report calls such incidents wrong but not illegal. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There's also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. Homeland Security warns most U.S. cities and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. Maine announced today it was beginning to test migratory birds for the avian flu. Maine's plan is modeled on the one in Alaska, where it's believed the first U.S. case will be found. Wildfires are burning in Colorado, Texas, Arizona, and Alaska. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a fire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, more than 7,000 acres have been scorched. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Ford says it will funnel millions of dollars into 3 factories in Mexico, the additional investment south of the border, as well as construction of a new plant in an undisclosed location, is billed as part of the automaker's economic turnaround effort. Japan today unexpectedly lost 2 key votes before the International Whaling Commission. Japan says it will consider quitting the International Regulatory Group if commercial whaling in the Pacific is not resumed. Apple Computer is investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. A subsidiary of Schlumberger announced it has been fined nearly $20 million. The subsidiary of the world's largest oil field services company was charged with making out fake visa applications for foreign workers on U.S. ships in the Gulf of Mexico. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 was down 5 at 1252. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together.
And now the final hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce. The city's
changing. All right, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and my buddy down under, John Fox, is back with us. Also, John, you with us?
Oh yeah, man. I heard Iran Contra, and my mouth just started to water. And our guest is, John Kaler. Welcome back to the program, and thank you so much for hanging on past the break.
Hi. Yeah.
Please, you were about to open up what felt like a huge can of worms, so I thought we should just give you a whole bunch more floor time, so please, take it away.
Okay, well, let me tell you, what we're battling is entrenched corruption in the nation. This corruption started back in the middle 80s when Ronald Reagan went in office and George Bush became vice president. When he was CIA director, I was introduced to him by a member of the Houston Mafia, okay? Barry Seal used to hang out in this part of the country where I'm at. I think if you read inside the Dixie Mafia down there at the bottom, and you'll see a website, you'll see a picture of Barry and the boys sitting around a table down in Mexico City. This was right before the Kennedy assassination. Debbie Seal gave me that photograph, and she gave it to Daniel Hopsicker, too. And we were together when she gave it to us on a Sunday morning here in Enterprise. Where I'm at now, I'm over in Enterprise, Alabama, close to Fort Rooker. But let me tell you, the Bush people put in to destroy this nation and take it over back during the Republican, the Reagan administration. They started so with the bankrupting of the savings and loans. Most of the people who bankrupted the savings and loans were two handfuls of people all connected to them, the George Bush Sr. and his people. They built the condominiums along the Gulf Coast of Florida. They laundered a lot of drug money, and they promoted all these people to Dixie Mafia kingpins, which is, Dixie Mafia is a loose word. It's the old redneck,
right.
You know.
I'm looking at your website now, and our listeners can go there and have a look while you're telling the story at insider-magazine.com,
right,
and
right.
Stroll all the way down to the bottom of the screen, and you can see all of what John's speaking about. Please go on.
That's right. My family was deeply involved in this, and my first cousin, my namesake, went to jail for supplying weapons to the Israelis during the Six-Day War.
Okay. Right.
And that's how far we go back into this kind of stuff, and it's all linked together. But let me say one thing, and I'm not trying to get out here like some kind of nutcase trying to promote an agenda. Okay, the agenda I'm promoting is that America is ours, freedom and democracy of ours, as long as we have guts enough to keep it. And,
right.
And people are losing their nerve. They're letting law enforcement officers, the police have become the Gestapo in many areas. Of course, there's a lot of good policemen. There's a lot of good sheriff deputies. There's a lot of good public service. But what's happened is they've turned this thing around on us in America. And they have decided at the top that they're going to take us. And they're going to tell us that the law is no longer the law, just like the day I went and tried to get the copies of the public document. You know, no, it's not the law today. It's not the law that we know. Even though, you know,
right.
And they're not going to show you a statute. But see, as citizens, we've got to stand up to these people. We've got to take a stand now. We can't take a stand later. Because what we're seeing around the country, and Wayne will tell you this too, Wayne Madison will tell you this, is we're seeing people disappear. We're seeing people being murdered and then coming up ruled as a suicide, like Ray Lemmy. You know, Lemmy was in that bathtub and he'd been beaten up and shot with a cattle prod or stun gun. He had stents in his heart. And then it clearly showed that the man was beaten and somebody cut his arms. But that's what's happening all over, and that's what I'm on now is I'm death case after death case. I've got this thing on my website here that I've just put part of the story up about the roundups to keep jails and the prisons full of homeless people. And I'm going deep into this where I'm going to prove the chief of police, Panama City, just rounding people up so that the Republicans can make money on them and keep these people incarcerated for 2-3 years at a time without a trial. And, you know, this part of the Republican plan, the first thing that happened with these people, it goes back a long way with me, is back in 1989 and 90, there was an attack on the federal judiciary in the United States. And that attack was ways to change the balance of power in the federal judiciary. And it was a mail bomb attack against the federal courts. I mean, do you guys remember that?
Vaguely, but I do remember something about it.
Okay, well, you know, they killed Judge Vance in Birmingham, and Wayne Robinson was a black guy over in Savannah, an attorney. He was attorney of record for NAACP on one case, and he was blown to bits by a mail bomb. I worked that case with the FBI. I was close to the suspects, which came from this hometown I'm in right here. Okay, the typewriters that typed all the bomb letters came from here, the terrorist letters. That was the first case of terrorism in America. And it was really wrapped up. The terrorists sent letters to 13 cities, to the news media in 13 cities, and the FBI confiscated all those letters except for one, the WAPT in Jackson, Mississippi. And they warned of a nerve gas attack upon the cities. Unless the court didn't correct their ways, the 11th Circuit Court in Atlanta didn't correct their ways. And basically, what it amounted to is Goody Marshall with Kennedy's office and I figured out that George Bush, Sr., as president, replaced about 73% of the federal judiciary just in a few months' time. And the reason why is federal judges in America were having to go to the toilet with a platoon of federal officers, marshal. And all the people who were anti-drug were having to go to the toilet with a platoon of federal marshal. And so that changed the balance of power somewhat. And then you've got these people, you know, they've come back into power now. They seized power at the election booth, and they didn't do it legitimately, legally. I'm a computer programmer. Wayne wrote the story about how they got control and rigged the voting machines, and they've got the voting software. And so that's
John,
where they're going.
John, can I ask you a question here?
Yeah.
Why? Because I've heard some discussion of this here and there recently. Why didn't Clinton go after Iran-Contra?
Everybody's running for president. John Kerry didn't go after it. And the reason why, they were members of the Skull and Bone Society.
And here we go.
Right, you know, see, a lot of people don't know that. I used to be a member of a group in this country that's now disbanded because one of our key leaders died. And we were getting telexes from the White House, from the National Security Agency and stuff like that on Bill Casey having dinner over in Europe with somebody, this and that. And we took on a lot of people, a lot of bad guys, and helped put them away. One of them was we did this $210 million deal that the Bush people had pulled to rob the savings and loans in Red Hill, Pennsylvania, and also Envision Bank in Texas. And that was the CIA, the mob, and George Bush.
And Wolfowitz and Pearl and the whole rest of the lot of the neocon guys,
right,
pretty much,
absolutely,
were all involved
absolutely.
In that. So they were never held accountable. So they ended up never actually getting out of the system completely, and Clinton just let it continue on.
He let it continue on. He certainly did. The thing of it is Barry operated out of Mena, Arkansas. We all know that. I believe, to be honest with you, you know, President Clinton was probably the most decent president I've ever known in my life.
I agree with you, but I reckon he was a good Republican in Democrats' clothing, is just how I feel about his legacy. He still within there did a lot of good things. Generally, the country did improve. People's stature did improve. He was smart. He was much smarter than these Republicans with things like money. And he didn't go starting stupid wars. And he has enough of a soul that he has, after his presidency, tried to make up for what he feels is his greatest mistake. So, but I do have my doubts about him being a true Democrat, because after he had then taken power, the rightful thing would have been to hold hearings, and nothing happened.
Well, see, that's the thing that people don't understand in this country. When they vote in November, they think if they vote for a Democrat, that they're going to be voting for a Democrat, but that's not true. Basically, what you got, most of these guys now in politics are carpetbaggers. You know, they change colors and parties just like the wind. You know, whoever's popular as hell, they're going to join with them. And so, you know, the idea of true democracy is gone from the system. All you've got now is you got a bunch of criminals who are running for public office, just like Alan Mintz, the Speaker of the Florida House. He's a criminal. The guy's from New Jersey. He owns part of the Gulf Asphalt Contractors. They're the biggest, one of the biggest paving firms in the state of Florida. And he is the Speaker of the Florida House. He gave himself millions and millions of dollars in contracts and subcontracts through Anderson Columbia. Give them to Anderson Columbia, and then the Anderson Columbia slid him the subcontracts, him and Charlie Hill. And Charlie Hill is one of the biggest Dixie Mafia figures in the history of the United States, and one of the biggest backers of the president of the United States.
So, what you just laid out, is that how the money? Are you laying out the Iran Contra chain right there? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's the same chain. This is these people have risen up the food chain now because they've got so much money and so much power that this is where it's at. You've got a bunch of people like Hilton and Vince and their associates okay, who have made money illegally and corruptly, running cocaine out of South America. These are the people, these are Bush people. This is where it's at. Criminals have been brought in, and they're taking
right.
over our government. And of course, this is, you know, this is, I guess, the American way. I don't know.
It's frightening, John. It's absolutely frightening. Now, is you say that there, you know, there seems to be an ongoing, you know, basically kind of list of running list of people who have been made to disappear, and
you know, there needs to be a list of people who are disappearing and who are dying and vanishing. You know, Gary Webb was a friend of mine, and Gary supposedly suicided. Remember that?
Say again, sorry?
Gary Webb. Remember him?
Oh, yes.
San Jose, you know, Mercury Tribune. Gary was a friend of mine. I helped him on out his Iran-Contra pieces. I mean, he wound up as a suicide.
That's right. Okay. Can you hold there? We need to actually take just a little bit of a break, and we'll just keep going after a couple
sure,
of messages.
Sure.
Can you hold on, John?
I'm not going all over with you, you know. I'm trying to...
No, mate. One of the things that Bruce and I like to... This show, if it's flowing, it's flowing. And this is Conversation Radio, and why stop something like this? Because this is just fascinating. John Kaler, Bruce Birch, we'll be back after a little bit of a break. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network, and I'm having a ball. We'll be back in just a little bit.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Man, all poor people look the same.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
And you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and I'm very fortunate to have a good friend on the air with me, my good friend John Fox with Fourth Estate Radio, and also John Kaler of Insider-Magazine.com. John, wait a minute. Before, I guess I need to use surnames if I'm going to talk to either one of you guys, right?
Yeah. Go ahead, what?
John Kaler, how about that? John Kaler, I had a kind of a question for you, and that is this. You know, you mentioned Gary Webb and the whole crack cocaine thing. Tell me what do you know about that that's not sort of out there in the public arena?
What's that now?
I didn't hear you. I was talking about the Barry. I think his name was Barry Webb, wasn't it, out in California? Or Gary Webb, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you, he was on to the right thing. This started, you really want to know something here? Okay, let me hit you with it, all right?
Hit me with
it. Go down and read Inside My Dixie Mafia and read the Barry Steele story and all that, everything else. You'll find I go very deep, okay? We go back to Cuba. Where the mafia had all their whorehouses and their casinos. And, you know, Castro took power and he kicked them all out. Okay, and they didn't like that. Well, those Cubans came to the United States, and that's the Republican Party's Cubans. Those are the good patriots because they were all for Batista and his dictatorship. Uh-huh. People were disappearing down there in the middle of the night.
Okay. Well,
one of those Republicans was Nick Navarro, and there's a book called Shadow Warrior, which has now been taken off the shelves by the CIA. If you can find one, grab it. It's by Felix Rodriguez, who was Oliver North's right-hand man, aka Max Gomez. Well, what they started doing is the agency started putting their people, into police departments nationwide, to help with the drug problem. But Nick Navarro and Rodriguez, Felix, were big buddies and roomed together in Pennsylvania, and Nick Navarro was the sheriff of Broward County, Florida. Okay? He became known as for Operation Rockpile. Rockpile was the roundup of blacks, the systematic roundup of blacks nationally. The building of private prisons nationally and private jails by the Republican Party and by the Bush people.
Right.
Were these blacks like militant blacks, or was this just a random roundup?
What's that now?
I said, were these blacks more militant blacks, or was it just sort of like a random thing?
No, they were mostly black. And they had school buses. In Panama City, they had school buses. They wasn't round up. They knew where they were going. They know where all these people are to take drugs. But what they
guilty of nothing but driving while black is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, they try to say that the crack thing was a black thing, but
okay.
It's really a black and white thing. All right, there's nothing special about drugs. But that's
right.
What they were doing. And so, I hope I didn't lose you, did I?
No, I'm still here. Are you still? Yeah, we got you.
Okay, so Navarro started this Operation Rockpile thing, and the police departments around the country started doing drug sweeps. But you know who was supplying the crack? it was the Iran-Contra boys, the people, the mob people on the street. See, the old Dixie Mafia people were the ones distributing the cocaine.
Okay.
They were the ones.
Right.
And all they were trying to do is criminalize society. And that's exactly where it started, is criminalizing society. And so that's how that got started. And Webb was on to something. He was on to something that, you know, that we all know about. And the fact is that George Bush and Oliver North and those people imported cocaine in the United States and dumped it on the school grounds and told everybody they were killing communists. And this will kill communism. The money that we raise from these drugs will kill communism. They did it in Nicaragua and El Salvador and everything else. And they got the idea from the French. And the French said, let's let the scum of the world into France finance our covert wars. And that's what happened when the Borland Amendment passed. That was the only way they could get funding, is to go out and sell crack cocaine. It was in cocaine.
Okay, so John, then what we're seeing now today, the end result of that being this massive industry, which is this prison industry that we see. You know, they're building one in Alaska big enough to hold something like 500,000 detainees. And, you know, and what you're telling us here, this really lays out some very, very scary possibilities for the future of innocent Americans, I reckon. Because, I mean, what else could they be wanting to use this for?
Well, let me tell you, this is what scares me very badly. And that's why, you know, I think that everyone in America should arm themselves. I think we should find some way to overthrow these people, not the government, because we've got a good government. As long as we make democracy be democracy, as long as we arm ourselves with the law and we let the police know we know the law and we make politicians adhere to the law. And the problem is people got where they don't care. They could care less. Everything is so insensitive. And then just like if you're in jail, just like I was this week, you know, you get to look at a camera. You don't get to see a judge. You don't get to actually talk to it. Okay, everything is so insensitive. Everything is so removed. The torture is designed to kill you without them touching you. You understand what I'm saying? And we've become desensitized.
Yes, John, I tell you, this has been some of the most incredible one of the most incredible calls I've had doing this program. And I really would love to get you back on very, very soon and talk about this more. Everyone, you must go to insider.magazine.com and
magazine.com.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Magazine.
Sorry about that. I was so good all those other times. But, John, thank you so much for being on with us on Fourth Estate Radio. We've got links on our website, and we will have you on again very, very soon, sir.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it. And hopefully I didn't over-talk. You know, there's just a lot to talk about here.
No, sir. It was great. It was fantastic. And we will have you on to continue this conversation. So, thanks again. We will be right back. We got to run out to this break. You're listening to John Fox and Bruce Birch on Fourth Estate Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked? You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
Bio-diesel. It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
All right, you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and I'm back with you as well as my good buddy John Fox. Don't bring me down. Okay. First of all, before we go any further, I wanted to make sure, go ahead and get the statement out there that we at Fourth Estate Radio definitely want to see the Bush regime get, changed to something different, but we want to make sure that it's legal and peaceful means that we go about doing that. And I just wanted to get that out there. Now.
On top of that, Bruce, as Randy Rhodes says, don't believe me. It's being put out there. Go read for yourself. You make up your own mind. But
that's right.
Man, I tell you what, though, that was just outrageous. I followed the connections. I couldn't believe it. And how far back this goes and how much I found most of what he told me just kind of reaffirming what I pretty well already knew, but not in that detail. I mean, he laid out the whole money stream of Iran-Contra. That was just, wow.
You know, the degrees of separation that exist are really amazing. And he and Wayne Madsen, now I did an interview with Wayne Madsen the other day, but he and Wayne Madsen together make a hell of a team. I think we should definitely keep them on the short list of guests that we need to have, just mainly because, the connections, we need to go deeper to find some of the true motivations for some of the things that are going on out there. I mean, I really find, listening to him, what I found was that, the stories keep going on. And you know what? The American public doesn't know the majority of this. I mean, this, these stories don't make it out there, so we need to help doing that.
Well, you know, sorry, I was just replying to something in our little production chat there, and but man, I don't know. I just my head still. My little brain is still chomping on a whole lot of that, but, you know, this all makes a lot of sense, you know, the hijacking of the courts, you know, all that kind of thing, by starting back with Reagan, you know, and I've talked many times, and I haven't actually said this in a little while, but when we first launched this show, you know, I said, you know, there was a fundamental shift in 1980 in America. A fundamental shift to the right. And that was Reagan, and it was all the post-Nixonites that hadn't gotten done either. And, you know, I was going to go off on this whole list of looking at, you know, Hillary's, you know, and the Democrats, some Democrats, contacts and lobbyists and all this kind of stuff. But I think that we may have to save that, and maybe we'll have the author of that piece on next week. But, you know, I think what John had to say is amazing. You know, there is a core level of corruption now in the system. The system is actually fine. It's the fact that it's not working the way it's supposed to, because it is, you know, there are still good people, but in its core, in the mechanism, there is this core corruption that is now so, I don't know, finely intertwined that, you know, again, it's a holistic kind of a thing, to go back even to our first hour subject of discussion. What do you reckon?
It's so heady. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. This is incredibly heady conversation. But I will say this, that to the folks in the chat room, you guys rock, and they've been following this whole story along the whole way. So, and I wanted to give props where props are due to our good friend Cossack in the chat, who turned me on to this this whole story. So thank you so very much, and mad props.
Thank you, Jim.
Yes. Okay, we were talking about doing free for all this hour, and apparently I think we already did our free for all.
did we just kind of stun everybody, and they're all just kind of
taking it all in?
Absorbing.
I guess.
Yeah, taking it all in, and I mean that's fair enough, you know. I'm just blown away, and you know, thanks to. Yeah, everybody who, you know, the network that we're starting to get happen, the other network besides this radio network, you know, of our listeners. I mean, Gene, who, you know, 3-4 times a day drops emails on the net neutrality stuff and all this other kind of thing, you know, and there's Susan out there somewhere who sends jokes and lighter side story stuff, and it's starting to get to the point where, you know, it's becoming this, you know, we are all in this together kind of thing. So thank you everybody for what you do to make this show just kind of what it is, because it's not just Bruce and I, it's everybody. And I hear that Jim wants on now, so hey Jim, I knew you couldn't hold back. Get on the air, buddy. What do you want to talk about?
Wow, what a disclosure.
How is that?
I don't know. I thought I was listening to a combination of Oliver Stone's JFK and The Pelican Brief. You know?
Hey, I like that.
Pardon?
I said I like that. I like that. Go on.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just basically what I think the gentleman was outlining, and just so very,
yeah,
very, very cogently and, you know, very matter-of-factly was to detail the operations of the only thing that I could describe is, and I will say, allegations of rogue elements in the government that have been at work for a very long, long time. And
And it goes across party lines too. Now, and I mean, one of the things that you know, not that I'm trying to say that the Democrats are as corrupt, but you have to look at a person by person, case by case basis, I think, and we have to really look at who's putting these people up, and you know, who's really who. Some scary stuff.
Well, you know, it's the old expression: absolute power corrupts absolutely. And you know, we have.
I think I remember you saying that before on this very program, Jim.
Oh yeah, it's true. I've always believed that. And you know, when people, I guess, arrive to such high positions in the government, and they have access to money, power, and these elements have no real check or balance on them, then I'm afraid it isn't the better, but the baser element of mankind that comes to the front, to the forefront.
And maybe they've done a brilliant job in rigging the system just enough so that they can get away with it easily. I mean, it just seems to be unabashed.
I mean, Bill Clinton was mentioned. You know, if Clinton had not so much baggage when he went into office, perhaps he could have done more.
Yeah. But, and like, I really wasn't wanting to go on a Clinton bashing session, but I really think that our democracy is in jeopardy and we have to take real stock.
And that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, he spent, I would say, 50% of his presidency fighting every personal battle that I've ever seen a president having to fight. You know, it's, I don't know. It's just I don't have anything profound.
I think you're very,
or whatever.
I think you're very eloquent. I think you're very eloquently stated, Jim. You know, we have all these dividing issues. Many of them red herring. You know, gay marriage, things like that. You know, we have real ones like, you know, medical. You know, the budget, the war, you know, and it's still the chaos and that they've created enables them to continue to keep going on as they've been going on. It leads me to just believe.
But
and until we actually fully really take stock, you know, I'm a registered independent only at the moment because the Democratic Party, I'm trying to get it back to be what it's supposed to be. But right now it's not. So I have to I declare myself an independent. But I am working to try and get the Democrats to be what they once were and representing much more the worker, that kind of thing, than anybody is at the moment. But,
that
you know,
indeed be quite desirable. Yes, it would be. But, I mean...
So you want to hang on, Jim? We got a break to take. You want to hang on?
Yeah, fine. No problem.
Okay. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. Jim's going to hold on, help us wrap up the show. We've been having a full night. Bruce Burch is still up there in North Carolina.
Good day.
And we'll be right back here with more on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children, It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
If we do not take responsibility for saving animals from extinction, we allow a part of ourselves to die with them, because in the web of life,
and if I pass,
we are all connected.
Again, you can rest assured.
Help World Wildlife Fund protect animals and the places where they live by ordering a free action kit. Together, we can leave our children a living planet.
She said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
What do nurses, teachers, and moms all have in common?
We help kids grow,
learn,
and thrive.
And they are all being targeted by Governor Schwarzenegger in this year's budget. Governor Schwarzenegger used to be known as an action hero. But what kind of hero targets moms and families to bear the brunt of budget cuts? In fact, the governor is choosing corporations over California's hardworking mothers. 70% of California's corporations pay no taxes at all, while the single biggest budget cut this year is to programs that benefit hardworking moms and their families, like child care, CalWORKs, and Medi-Cal. Governor Schwarzenegger, did you know that 92% of nurses and 76% of teachers are women? Stop targeting California's moms and kids. For more information, please call the California Partnership at 562-862-2070. Brought to you by the California Partnership. On the web at california-partnership.org.
Across the night.
All right, you're back on 4th and State Radio. This is Bruce Birch. My buddy John Fox is still over there. I did want to, before we get right back on with Jim, because we only got a couple more minutes left, I wanted to plug a story that's going to be on PBS Tuesday. Tuesday's episode of the PBS Public Affairs series Frontline will probe the battle between Vice President Dick Cheney and the CIA to control the, quote, dark side, end quote, according to a press release on the show. Quote, amid daily revelations about pre-war intelligence and a growing scandal surrounding the indictment of Vice President's Chief of Staff and Presidential Advisor Louis Scooter Libby, Frontline goes behind the headlines to investigate the internal war that was waged between the intelligence community and Richard Bruce Cheney. I didn't know his name was Bruce. The most powerful vice president in the nation's history, says the press release. So if you are doing nothing on Tuesday night, actually, you should be listening to Bob Kincaid. But if you can't get on the radio that night, then watch this thing. I'm sure that, depends on where you live. I'm sure it'll be an interesting show. But we're back on with Jim. Jim, are you still there?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if ever you saw that film called The Clash of the Titans. It was an adaptation of...
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I had a whole set of albums, Tales of the Olympian Gods, written by Edith Hamilton, narrated by Ronald Coleman. But there was one story of, you know, about Perseus and his pursuit of his love Andromeda. And, of course, in order to do that, he had to kill this monster called the Kraken. And in order to do that, they had to visit these old women called the Stygian Witches. And they said the only way
to
was to get the head of the Medusa. And one of the old women said, and she's not exactly going to give it to you. And that's kind of the way some of these people in Washington are. To me, they're like the Medusa. They're not
no kidding.
Their heads voluntarily, I can assure you of that.
No kidding. No kidding, Jim. Thanks. Thanks for that. And with that, we're going to let you go, and Bruce and I are going to do the housekeeping and wrap it up for another Saturday night and Sunday. Thanks for ringing in, mate.
Good night, Joe.
All right. Have a good night. Well, Bruce.
Deep subject.
Man, it's just been insane. It's been insane. And I love that movie, by the way. It's one of my favorites from when I was a kid. I'll still watch it.
Of the Titans.
Oh, you know, and the effects are really, really old school, you know, stop motion. It's a little rough, but it's, you know, I reckon they had fun making that film. I reckon it still kind of holds up in a quirky kind of level. It's great. Plus, I was playing Dungeons & Dragons back then. Of course I was.
Oh, no, you weren't one of the Dungeons & Dragons guys, were you?
Oh, yeah, man.
Well, I don't know if I can keep doing a radio show if you did. I don't know. I don't know if I can keep doing this if you were one of
those. Something about my credibility. Oh, no. I didn't know that was a strike against me.
Well, you know, I just... We're going to have a conversation about this. Maybe we'll do it on conversation radio.
I think our producer's getting in on the game here. Yeah. Anyway. And thank you, Agnes, for taking care of tonight's show so well.
What a wonderful job.
Yeah. What a great night. We've had the chat room is going off. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much. Don't forget to go by. And if you have already, thank you, the White Rose Society. And drop, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100 grand, you know, in Ben's back pocket and help him keep all that great content happening. Like this show and everything that's on our network, this stream you're hearing, you know, and, we're definitely going to get John back on and get more into the deep and dirty side of the corruption that's actually, cause man, I'm still spinning. From that, you know, and I had a bit of a look on his website, and it just doesn't seem to, you know, so far, I'm not seeing anything, you know, that looks bogus about it yet, and I can't wait to hear.
And I think, you know, just following along that line of reasoning, I think that what's most important to understand, I think, about the conversation that we just had with him is that a lot of the stuff, there's a lot of ties between a lot of people and a lot of situations and a lot of characters. But you know what? I never once heard him leave the realm of reality. I never once heard him leave seriously, I never heard any sort of like, I mean, because I've had conversations with a lot of people about these kinds of things, and they say a lot of stuff that makes perfect sense, and then all of a sudden you hear something get dropped into the mix like it was the Elders of Zion, or it was the, you know, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, hold on. But I never heard any of that. I mean, basically what he said is, you know what, these are a bunch of criminals. And you know what, he's absolutely freaking right. They are a bunch of criminals, and it's up to us to try to turn them out. Turn them out on their ears and say, you don't deserve to lead us any longer, you know. And that's going to be our job over the next 6 to 8 months, John, you and I, on Fourth Estate Radio, is to try to pull the sheets off, you know, these plainclothes Klansmen, right?
Yeah, and we're gonna. I think the bit that we didn't really get into today, I think, should be something that we need to actually concentrate on. Is look at who is influencing policy and our politicians, and finding out, you know, and starting to draw the internal lines, and in those districts where we still have primaries left, push for, you know, cleaner, more progressive candidates and see who we can, you know, get in or influence them to start, you know, shunning it and actually looking out for the people. And I think, was it Pelosi the other day that had that great little rant on the floor about not staying the course? Can I just, before we get out of here, huge round of applause for that little rant. I thought in amongst a bunch of spineless, and I'm just going to bite my tongue, you know, do-nothing politicians. She stood up and just said, you know what? Nah, I ain't doing it. I'm not doing it. And bloody good on her, because she's the only one that I really heard come out and go, this is nonsense, and it's not working. Something's got to change. Something has to change. Because, I mean, it's just, it's obviously just rife, and all the way through all levels of the bureaucracy. It's incredible.
Right. Well, it is, and you know, we're trying to bring some reality to the mess here.
So anyway, man, have a great week next week on the Bruce Birch radio program. And,
well, I certainly will.
You got anything lined up already?
I've got a bunch of stuff lined up, but I'm going to talk. I'll do a blog post on Monday and run down some of it. You know, nothing absolute yet. Besides Wayne Madsen on Friday, you know, that's going to be a recurring thing. At least we.
That's great.
Tentatively agreed to that. I'll have my you know, Monday may be just sort of like a roundup of the weekend, and then we'll get into some of the more interviews Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But we'll see. Just depends on what's sniffing about the air on Monday. Whether I'll have, you know, depending on what I'll have on now. The one thing that I do want to do also is just go ahead and plug Guy James as well, because he has a fantastic show right in front of mine, and then yeah. Bob right behind mine. So, you know, guys, tune into the network all week. Lots of great progressive, and should I, dare I say, even liberal talk radio. Liberal, excuse me, conversation radio.
Right on, Bruce. Say good day. We got to get out of here. And Beta, test drive one of our Beta pop-up players over on the Listen Live page, and those things will be kind of changing around over the next couple of days, but they're working for you. And, man, Bruce, thank you so much for everything you did. Thank you to the listeners, everybody in the chat room. Thank you, Agnes. And thank you, and always, 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 RMR. Ah, sorry. Thank you. The West District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. I'm trying to rush to get out of here. You put everything on this network on, and always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Good day.
Damn ready that your will